pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show at Upper Talk 106.5, 6 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. We do appreciate you listening as always. Coming up in about a half hour from now, my colleague at Laniap, Ashley Trice, will join us. We'll talk about scandals in Alabama. That's her column this week, and she finds it to be a little underwhelming, but ought to be riveting radio for you there. Stay tuned for that. But joining us now, first time on the show, very pleased he accepted the invitation. I hope to get him on more in the future. From Winfield, that's in Marion County, up in the northwestern-ish part of the state. State Representative Tracy Estes joins us on the line. Representative, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jeff. Thank you for the invitation.
Hey, thanks for doing this. We do appreciate it. Before we get into some things that you're working on, what are you hearing on gaming in the House, in your body, now that it's out of the Senate? It rests in the House hands. Do you have any, hearing any buzz or anything you could share with us?
Oh, yeah, I think hearing the buzz would be an understatement. It's also the big topic of conversation right now because, you know, about 5 or 6 weeks ago, Senator Marsh's plan came short by about 2 votes of getting out of the Senate. And so I knew immediately, at least I felt like there would be some immediate response and some simple lottery bills introduced. And they were. And that's actually what Mr. McClendon, the senator, had brought up in the Senate last week. And then that's when some amendments were added and basically reverted back to the original complete gaming package bill that we saw get out this time. But I think what has happened, now I can't speak for everybody else, but just comments I'm hearing around the chambers, I discuss it with colleagues, is I believe a simple lottery would have passed last year with flying colors had COVID not cut everything short. There were 70 co-sponsors, if my memory serves me correct, in the House. And as you know, it just takes a simple majority of 53 to get something out. So if just the co-sponsors had stood by their signature on the bill, then it would have gotten out. I think that would have been the case this year as well. But then it's gotten more complicated because there's folks that were for a simple lottery that are not for this complete package. So if I had to guess based on the numbers I've seen, I serve as an assistant whip. And for folks who do not know, part of that job is helping count votes when you think it may be close, going around and talking to colleagues, saying if the vote were held today, where do you think you would fall? Yes, it's not binding or anything. It's just colleagues talking. And just the numbers I've seen right now, I think it's going to be pretty tight.
Well, and that, you know, it looked like it ought to have been when Marsh first brought it out. I thought, well, it's going to sail through the Senate, but that wasn't the case. It took some work, it took some effort, and you thought the difficult place where these things historically have fallen apart has been in the lower chamber, it, you know, the ethics of gambling, or you know where the money should go, or just the way this is being done versus a standalone lottery. And it's not clear to me that that's really changed that much.
Well, there are, and I'll admit, I mean, I'm very conservative. My spiritual life is very important to me. I'm a deacon at Winfield First Baptist Church. I sing lead in the Southern Gospel Quartet. But I also realize I represent 46,000 people in my district. And I will go as far as to say this. I just committed on a newspaper interview about 30 minutes ago and said this publicly and tried to explain to folks who are not familiar with the process, so that your listeners are. I don't want to insult anybody, but it's really a two-part process, Jeff, as you know. There's a three-piece legislation package that is what people would consider the gaming bill, although it's actually multiple pieces of legislation. A simple majority vote of 53 would get that bill passed. But since allowing this gaming legislation or this type of activity in our state would be against the current Constitution, that's why it would have to be put up to a vote of the people and probably on the general election ballot in November 22. Because you would be changing the Constitution. And if you do that, the threshold for that piece of legislation, put it on the actual ballot, is higher. It takes 63 votes to do that. And you've seen it before in the past, as have I. Sometimes a bill will come up and a lawmaker will be disappointed because he didn't have enough votes to block whatever that legislation might be. And if it happened to be something which required a constitutional amendment, they would try to block the piece of legislation through the back door by preventing the numbers to be there to get the constitutional amendment actually placed on the ballot. But I've actually told the newspaper in one of my three counties, and I'm telling your listeners here the same, if it comes to the point that I just can't get comfortable with supporting the actual bill, I'm not going to get cute and try to block it on the constitutional amendment, because to me, those are two different things. If this bill gets out of the House, if the actual legislation on the gambling passes, to me at that point, that issue is decided. And I would not be comfortable at that point, even if I choose to vote against the package, I'm not going to come back and try to block it with the CA.
Well, and do you think you guys, is there enough time for any of this to take place with just a few weeks ago?
I think so. We had meetings last week, and the speaker, for those who do not know, Matt McCutcheon, he's one of the finest men I've met. He's, you know, we've had some problems with speaker leadership in the past, very recently. Matt McCutcheon's not that. For those who don't know, your Speaker of the House is retired law enforcement, retired hostage negotiator, and currently an associate pastor up in his district near Huntsville in Monrovia. And so when he does things, he does it right, and his word means something. And he has assured us that we're going to be methodical, that we're going to move the bill. And I have every reason to believe, unless something unforeseen pops up, this will come up for a vote.
It's interesting that you say that, because that was kind of the question. Does this even have a path forward? Because a lot of guys in the Senate, you know, some of these guys in the Senate walked a plank on this bill and not knowing what the future had in store for the House even bothered to take it up. And a lot of things, as you just mentioned, kind of would die and wither on the vine there, but that you think this is definitely going to get a vote.
I will say, I'm always hesitant. I'm getting older. I'm 53 years old now, Jeff, and I'm learning to never say never as I get to where I age a little bit. But based on the conversations I'm hearing, I will be surprised if it does not come up for an actual vote on the House floor.
Well, we're going to keep our eyes on that. That seems to be commanding the lion's share of attention as far as the state legislature goes here in the waning days. Representative, some other things I wanted to get you on about. Obviously, watching you on your Capital Journal appearance last week on public television. Yeah, a couple of things that I think are interesting issues that you've been working on over the years. First off, this terrorism registry effort, that it's not typically something you would think of that the state government would be involved in such an effort. But walk us through that. Talk a little bit about that, what you've been working on these past few years.
Okay. Sure, I'll be glad to. That was something, and let me put this disclaimer up front. This is very personal to me, and I don't mean in a personal way that I'm trying to use the legislative body to help me personally. It's a patriotic thing. Many of your listeners will remember the young man that was 32 at the time, the CIA agent, former Marine, that died. He was the nation's first war or casualty in the War on Terror back on November 25th, 2001, Mike Spann. That story made international news because he was the first. And when he was at the Khalajangi prison in Afghanistan on that day when he was killed and shot two shots to the skull, I mean, right there in the temple, point-blank range, the Taliban held him down. There was the American Taliban that some of you remember, John Walker Lynn from the state of California, that was there that day. And I had personally watched with members of the FBI when they were here in my hometown of Winfield, because they converged on the Spann household as all this was unfolding over in Afghanistan. And I personally seen my former neighbor interrogating the American Taliban, and that man did not share information that the uprising was about to begin. So he was eventually convicted, spent 17 years in a federal prison, and is about to get out. And I'm thinking, okay, where's he going, man? So to get to the point, I started working with attorneys at the Legislative Services Agency, and we put together a piece of legislation. What we had intended doing last year before COVID hit, we were going to put a basic framework into place. And I had worked with members of Congress, all members of the Republican delegation in the House, which is all but one of the seven members. Not only were they supportive, most just offered to say, hey, I want to carry this bill. Well, my effort was I wanted to make it a bipartisan effort. So I reached out to Senator Jones's office and Congresswoman Sewell's office and never got to speak to either of them directly. But despite multiple contacts with both offices, the effort, they never showed an interest, if I'm being completely honest, in making this a bipartisan effort. What it would have done at the federal level, they were going to pass an addition to U.S. federal code that would have put this terrorism register that I was seeking under the same header, for lack of a better term, or subsection, as the sex offender registry, sex offender law with the federal government. And it would allow for folks that are convicted, this is a very narrow scope, Jeff, This would apply only to those who have been convicted of crimes against their country and serve time in a federal prison as a result. Now, you know, as a journalist, and I know as a former 30-year journalist, that, you know, now you can call in a bomb threat to a local school, and that's actually an act of terrorism. As bad as that is, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like I said, people who have committed crimes against this country and have served time in a federal penitentiary. So what we were going to do, we were going to do what was necessary at the state level. Congress was working with me. Senator Shelby was fully aware of what we were trying to do, and we were going to try to pass the law at the local level. I mean, at the state, federal level, I'll get up in a minute, at the federal level to partner with them so the federal government would notify us X number of days, 90 or 180 days, when someone was scheduled to be released from having served time for those particular crimes, and they had plans to come back to Alabama, and they would be monitored for the remainder of their life, just to know where they are and make sure they're not a threat. In my research and Legislative Services Agency's research during that process, I learned at that time, the number may be higher now, there were over 500 such individuals in this country that were just floating around the country that had served time for crimes against our country, and we had no clue where they were. So that was what we tried to do last year. Well, I pre-filed the bill this year since we didn't have time to get it out last year, and shortly after I filed it, a few weeks later, I probably pre-filed it in early January, and I got thinking about it. I thought, there's no need to do this year because I don't think the president would sign it. I just don't. And we've got a House right now where the Democrats are in the majority, and I'm not trying to be political here. I'm just being honest. I don't think we'd have had the support to get it passed. So at that point, I just asked them not to move the bill. You know, it's been filed, but you can request, don't move it. Just let it sit there. And now I'm working. There's a federal group that has reached out to me that's very interested in these type things and has made me aware there are still some things we could do at the state level to accomplish most of the goals we want. They have been involved in bills of different levels of punitive damage, or whatever you want to call punitive punishment for these folks. And so they said, we can write you a bill for Alabama if you'd like one. I said, well, naturally, I'm going to run it past the attorneys at the state house when you get done with it. But I said, you take whichever one you've got already written and passed in another state, put that on steroids, and send that to me, because I want the toughest one in the entire country. So that's what we're trying to accomplish, is I want to make these people's lives miserable. If you've raised arms against our country, then we need to know where you are if you've served time in the federal pen. I know technically they've served their time and paid their debt to this country, but there's a few crimes like that we still need to monitor even after the time in prison has been completed.
Do you find a cooperation in kind of when you were getting to where you are on this legislation, do you find cooperation between federal and state authorities? Does that ever come up as an issue?
Well, this is the first time I've ever been involved in something like that. And actually, this is my first term in office in Montgomery. And I was very blessed, having been a journalist for years. I really had a good relationship with Congressman Adder Holdem, and his hometown is like 20 miles from mine. And you know how it works. We had worked together quite extensively over the years through our mutual work. And same thing with Senator Shelby. And so it really kind of helped. You already had some inroads there. But I can't brag on the Republican members of the delegation. I spoke to every one of them personally. And they could not have been more supportive once they saw what we were trying to do. And had COVID not got us last year, would have got what we wanted last year. And we had a president last year that I have no doubt would have signed it.
Well, Representative, I hate to say this, we're up against a break here, but we need to get you back on here again real soon and talk about some other things going on when time permits.
That sounds great, Jeff. I always look forward to it.
All right. That was State Representative Tracy Estes on the line. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.